everyone. Welcome to episode 38 of Bad End Podcast. It's 2019, which is fucking crazy.
There's a weird monster on the podcast with us.
I am one of your co-hosts, Katie McCarthy. I am a writer with usgamer.net. I am joined, as always, by my lovely co-hosts.
I am Kyle Cookstell, a writer for blog.kylecookstell.com. Recently published my top things of 2018. Really glad I could get that piece up. You know, those guys,
right,
the guys
on
that
time.
Run that site. Yeah, the guys that run that site really just publish as soon as I'm done. So I appreciate that.
A minimal editing process for Kyle. And my name is Josh Calixto. You might know me from Kotaku.com, RollingStone.com, New York Magazine, IDK, the Korean K-pop Snapchat publication.
Snapchat pub.
I didn't know that was a thing, a Snapchat publication. Yeah, it's been interesting.
That's strange, but cool.
Yeah, hopefully you got some new projects coming up this year for y'all. But let's talk about 2019. All right, 2018 is over. One of the worst years of game. Now that it's in hindsight, one of the worst years.
Could safely
say. I think this is like one of the worst years in history. Like playing, yeah. Like, you know,
it just felt like just day after day was like, what crazy thing did a president do?
Right.
Yeah.
And then what thing did gamers do? And then it's like, what game came out that people liked and then hated? I think like we were it was an emotional roller coaster of a year. Yeah.
There's some good games, as we discussed in our Game of the Year episode, our last episode, which you could listen to on SoundCloud or iTunes or Spotify or anything.
It's just like,
we are on Spotify now.
Maybe video games are over, you know, like maybe that's it.
That's it.
We had a good run, a nail in the coffin.
They're done.
That's the last year of video games.
Shut down the Reddit.
Could be. I mean, honestly, like gaming is so it's so expensive to develop games now, and it's only going to get more expensive now that like 8K is going to be a fucking thing. So it's like, let's just hang up the towel. Like, what's
the
point?
It's just Fortnite. It's only Fortnite that exists.
Yeah,
now. Fortnite, multiplayer
it's
games.
It's like the cheapest
COD.
Game to make, making all the money, all that matters.
Fortnite.
Yeah, it's like lowest barrier, highest meme potential, makes money.
Yeah. I mean,
it's kind of like when everybody last year or 2 years ago decided to try to pivot to video and they're like, this makes sense. And then they got burned.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really surprised. I thought Epic would be like maybe a little smarter. I feel like they're definitely putting all their eggs in this single basket when they have, I mean, I guess they have Unreal Engine. So there's that. So maybe not. Maybe Epic's really smart and they're doing the right thing. I don't know.
It's possible.
It's possible Epic is doing the right thing. You heard it here first.
We got a lot in store for y'all this 2019. We're going to be switching things up here at Bad End Podcast. I mean, it's still going to be the same podcast you know and love. We're just trying to make some changes. We're trying to do things differently. And we would love everyone's input on that. So if you get the chance, if you listen to the show, if you like it, if you don't like it, if there's things that you think should change, please shoot us an email or a tweet. Is it badendpod@gmail.com? Yeah, it's badendpod@gmail.com.
Badendpod@gmail.com.
And then our Twitter is badendpodcast. So shoot us an email or a tweet if you have any ideas about like directions where you think the show should go. We are looking at getting like a Patreon in the future. We have had some positive input on putting that forward. So we're just going to try to release more consistently for now and do a couple more exciting things that you guys will be seeing as we move forward in the year. So just a little housekeeping stuff, but let's get into the show. Let's talk about video games. We've had a couple weeks off. We've had some time to sit down, play some games. Anything y'all are excited about this week?
I just want to open up by wrapping up the fact that at the end of last year, when I heavily pushed for Obra Dinn to be Game of the Year, I had not played Obra Dinn. I was just had a really good feeling about it. And I was really banking on your guys' opinions. Happy to say that one, because I've now played Obra Dinn for about, I think, 3 or 4 hours now, and that shit slaps, and it's really good, and I'm really glad we gave it Game of the Year, because it's, I actually wrote this on a blog.kylecookstell.com, that's, last name is K-U-K-S-H-T-E-L, But then I feel like, especially in light of like Papers, Please being kind of this like iconoclastic game that did like a ton of crazy sales for what it was, but also in some ways like bridge this idea between this sort of like different games, opus motorandi. I forget that phrase, but modus like the operandi. Idea of, there you go. Between I totally butchered that, but moving between like that kind of idealistic thing and like news games plus like kind of more mass appeal indie games. And it was one of the first games to actually kind of successfully bridge these two and was like super potent and powerful. And I think that Oberdin just like does all that better. It's like more subtle. Like it's the gameplay is like slightly more interesting. It still managed. It like has some of these managerial aspects that Papers, Please has, but has them in a little, it's like not as kind of weird paper shuffly on a board. It's more about a book. Like it's a lot of the same themes, but kind of like taken to not necessarily the next level, but done in a way that like, it feels like all the weird rough edges were kind of like smoothed off for something that feels like more concise and considered. And like, that's a good game, man.
Yeah.
It's a really good game.
Big fan. I've ever since I moved to California, I've been drinking a lot of Boba Din.
Oh, it's good.
My
dude.
Favorite talk what's show host favorite? Is Oprah Din.
I was about to say, what's your favorite milk tea drink? Oh, do you have another joke in you?
You gotta watch out for the snakes called Cobra Dins.
I mean, yeah. I'm gonna have to recover from that one by reading some self-help books by Deepak Chopra Din. Anyway, we got a tangent here. I don't know how this happened. No clue. Let's talk about a different video game, because we did talk about Oberdin a little bit last time.
We did.
And I got some stuff that I've been playing. I've been playing some like older stuff because I have this continual problem where I like look at Steam and I'm like, there's no good games that I'm interested in playing. You know, like, I don't know what the hell is up with this. Like, am I in a rut? Am I just not getting, you know, enjoyment?
I think you haven't like fed the algorithm enough. You got to like give it a little more juice.
I have to click through my wish list.
Yeah, man. You gotta, I did this.
What's the timeline thing that Steam
not gives interested, me? Interested, yeah. Not interested. You just go like swipe left and right on some Steam games for like 2 hours.
I've been like getting so many like roguelikes and shit, and I'll play for like 3 minutes and just be like, fuck this shit. Because
I'm good.
It's because they know you're a Slay the Spire
the
stan.
Thing is, the thing that sucks about like roguelikes is when you play one good one, every one that's like marginally worse is just like not worth a moment of your
that's
time.
Totally true. It's like I feel like with Dead Cells I kind of had that, right, where I was like, I've just been playing shit my whole life, like what have I been doing?
I mean,
like, this is actually good.
Yes, you get a game like Dead Cells, which is like slightly better than the others, and that keeps you going. But even that's, it's like that, even that, a new one of those takes more to like compel me until I actually beat that game. You know, I played Dead Cells for a long time, but was it fulfilling as like the first time I got really into a roguelike? You know, fucking Spelunky was made in like, what, 2012? We're never going to reach that.
Long time ago.
We're never going to get
longer
there again.
That.
Come on. Like, fucking Derek, you destroyed my life.
Just destroyed video
games.
He
fucked up video games for a decade to follow. Anyway, it's unfair, which is to say that I've been trying to download like larger budget action games because I usually vibe with those, like at least to the point where I can like turn off my brain and enjoy them. So I downloaded a little game called Sunset Overdrive.
Oh,
because it's out on PC now.
Is that game like $5 now?
It's
probably. Well, it just came out on PC though recently.
It used to be a Xbox exclusive, which is why I never had it, because I don't have an Xbox One. And
as you shouldn't.
Yeah, as I don't feel bad about that. And because most of the stuff is going to come out for PC that comes out on Xbox anyway. And I play mostly on PC. So it's out on PC now. And I'm playing this game. And I am so fucking annoyed at this game.
Oh, it's so annoying.
It has
the worst sense of humor in the world.
Obnoxious fucking game I have ever seen. It's like think of video game bros. Like, think of a guy on a stage at E3 wearing a blazer over a graphic t-shirt with jeans that don't fit, that are like slightly washed out, that they probably got at JCPenney
like,
the day
yeah,
before.
And like ugly sneakers, like ugly nothing sneakers, fashionable.
And they're up there
starters
and they're like
and Adidas white socks.
This is punk. Think the Ramones. Think the Clash. Think fucking
Ramones.
Macklemore.
Green Day. Macklemore.
And
punk icons.
Imagine Dragons. And that's what this video game, that is what this video game is in essence. It's like the worst fucking JCPenney graphic t-shirt punk distilled.
What's that fucking clothing brand that was like totally like a JCPenney Macy's type thing, but it was like trying to look like hardcore, but it was just embarrassing. But like everyone,
I think there's been a
them.
Few of them.
There's definitely like one I'm thinking of in particular that was like a little ridiculous.
Oh, there was a lot of those in like the 90s.
Yeah,
there was like
man.
Far out.
They always had like the
fucking
like weird like metal-y font, and it's like, you know, you could just wear like a Thrasher tee and look cool, but
yeah, it was.
That's like when being a poser was a big thing you didn't want to be. You're like, oh, you got your shirt at JCPenney, mm-hmm.
not
PacSun. Not
Hot Topic. What the fuck?
The Journey. You didn't go to Hot Topic, poser.
Dude. Like tech deck commercials. Are more punk than Sunset Overdrive.
Dude, Tech Deck was sick though.
Yeah,
like,
oh,
Tech Decks
deck
are
was
sick.
Pretty
like
sick.
You can't like Tech Decks were cool.
Okay, even
know?
The ones, even like the finger bikes were more punk.
Okay, yeah, yeah, that's
finger
a good
bikes.
Comparison. Yeah, those are weak.
Kids these days
those
don't even
no
know about finger bikes.
Fucking finger.
How do you
bikes,
even control
dude?
Them? Like, what do you even do? You have to have big ass hands for that. Like, I never. Yeah, they're weird, right?
Anyway, it is Because I remember there was like an article on Killscreen about this. And I was like, come on, they're probably overblowing it. It's just a video game, like whatever. But I feel like something is being desecrated in Sunset Overdrive. Like, I like punk music. I did grow up listening to that stuff. And like, I still listen to a lot of punk. Some of it is poppy punk. And I'm not like super elitist about this shit. But this game is like, it has no respect. It has just like no, it's not fun. It's not cool. The whole aesthetic thing is just fucking obnoxious. And I hate it. And I don't want to, I don't want to play it again because it doesn't even feel that good to play.
How long have you played it for?
Like an hour.
Yeah, you're like, I was about to say, I was like, if you played it for 4 hours,
no.
You made a big mistake.
So I played Sunset Overdrive for the first time last year too, which was, I think I got an Xbox One for the first time, and it was like one of the games where I was like, I might as well, and it was really cheap or something.
One in Rome.
And I feel like I had like an okay time with it for the weekend. Like I just kind of like played podcasts. Like I muted it because I was like, oh, I cannot deal with this. This is like already so obnoxious. Like I cannot. Yeah. But I don't know. I was like grinding around and stuff. Like I don't know. I like Jet Set Radio, so it's like it loosely touches that, but not, it's not like cool like that. It's like an embarrassing version of Jet Set Radio.
It also, it looks like a worse version of all the grinding mechanics in Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, where you're like Shadow, just like fucking on a rail. Just like,
I mean, that, those are not that great either, dude.
It's
like,
by Insomniac, right? And they have this weird thing where they, I felt like after Sly Cooper, like their games started getting more where like you
snap
to.
Oh, that's not the right, that's different. Not
Sucker
same
Punch.
Developer.
Sucker Punch.
Sucker
I'm
Punch
and
Sly Cooper.
Who did Infamous? Was that
also
Insomniac?
Sucker Punch.
Oh, Ratchet and Clank.
Ratchet and Clank
was Insomniac.
Yeah. They did like Up Your Arsenal and like those type of
games.
Oh
my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Worst
it's
sub name
totally
ever.
The fucking same studio. But like you would like snap to rails and stuff like that. Like there's a lot of like shit where you're snapping to stuff. And that happens a lot in this game where it's like you feel just like sluggish,
you have like magnets in your feet.
Heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, ugh, it feels gross to me to play this shit a little bit. Like, and like Spider-Man, I think was like not that bad with that stuff. But,
I think they like sailed off the theme of Spider-Man though. That game probably makes itself where it's like, well, he's got
I
a web.
Like Spider-Man's like fine. Like, I don't think it's like a bad game by any means. It's just kind of like, I thought it was fun to swing around. I feel like they nailed that, but I also feel like I kind of did that in Spider-Man 2, so I wasn't like as astounded by it, but I was like, I don't know, it was fun. Like, I think it had a really good photo mode, which I think is like a rarity. Like, a lot of photo modes are very bare, I feel like, and Spider-Man's was like, there's a lot of fun features, a lot of fun poses, and it was just like, I thought that was like,
can you take selfies?
Yeah, you can do selfies. Okay. And you do like,
I mean, that's really stuff. What matters,
right? It's so fun. You just like swing around. Like, I found the Avengers building and took a selfie against that. I found Uncle Ben's grave and took a selfie next to that because I thought it was funny. And I saw someone else did it on like Twitter, and I was like, oh god, I gotta fucking find this. And I did it, and it was great. And I was wearing like the punk outfit, which is also not very punk. He's like wearing like a denim vest, and then he has like a mohawk of spikes. And
it's so
like,
punk.
It's really silly, but you know, whatever.
Spider-Man, it's like Sunset Overdrive is like Spider-Man, but not fun. You know?
I mean, it's also loud and obnoxious. It's like, I don't think Spider-Man's that obnoxious.
I get the sense though that like, the people who made that game like liked working on it, and I respect that. Like, I think I read somewhere with that, like, it was kind of an internal project that someone just pitched, and they were like, "Why the fuck not?"
It and they seems did like it. They, I don't know. Like, I don't think it like plays bad. Like Josh is saying, like, I thought it was like a fun mindless game for like the weekend I played it, and it was like, I don't know. I just like turned on podcasts and I skated around and shot zombie energy drink monster things and. I have, like, an okay time. Like, I don't know. I don't think I'm ever going to go back to it. Like, I don't ever go back to my Xbox in general, but, you know.
That game, it like, reeks of, like, one of those, like, first-gen games that comes out on a console that just gets totally forgotten.
Like, oh, for sure. But it's, like, it has this, like, cultural relevance because it's, like, the only Xbox One exclusive, pretty much.
And it's being sold with bundles, too, like, now. Like, you can buy a console, I think, with the game. It's, like, who, what? Okay.
It's pretty strange. But now I guess Insomniac has like Spider-Man as like a big like, oh, they did Spider-Man. Here's the game they did right before that. It's like, all right. Yeah.
Oh, dude, can we move off this topic to a crazy thing that happened between the last two Bad End episodes?
Yes. What went down?
I got to look it up, but this crazy thing happened where all of the PS4's owners of games leaked. How many people own a game on PS4 leaked? Which is like nuts. So I'm going to try to bring it up. But it's crazy. Oh, yeah, here we go. Sony inadvertently leaks player counts for PS4 titles. So the nuts part about this is that it's like, it's the first time that I think these numbers have like actually been like released in any sort of public form, because, and I think it's like, it's important too, because it's the sort of thing that like, I think that we've talked about this on the podcast, but there's sort of this like aura of AAA-ness that games have to maintain. And they kind of enforce that like hegemony of owning the space of games by keeping a lot of the actual like
player counts and shit like that.
Player counts really low. Yeah. It's like a game like Fallout 76 can seem like a massive game, but if you actually see it, like, oh, only 200,000 people are playing this game on PS4, it's like, oh shit, like,
that's not that much.
There are five times that many people playing fucking RimWorld on Steam right now. I think it's like, it was the first time it felt like this AAA bubble was potentially like being popped, not like by any sort of intentional thing, but the fact that like people haven't talked about it since then, but I think it will be relevant as the year goes on. But like, that it's actually starting. I think it actually showed people like, oh, hey, like these games have their player counts aren't like astronomically higher besides like Grand Theft Auto 5 than a lot of other games that people play. And I think that's easy for somebody to like shit on an indie game because you're like, oh, nobody's going to play that. You're going to play like 10,000 people are going to play that. And then like, oh, you know, whatever hot PS4 game from last year has like, you know, 60,000 players. It's like not a ton of people. So it's kind of crazy. I got it up right here. I'm seeing if I can find an interesting one.
That stuff kind of like trips me out when I see it on Steam too, because you see like the amount of reviews, which I think is like what I look at it as a barometer, like mostly positive, 98,000, like, you know, however many of those that.
Yeah, if it's like a few hundred, I'm like, oh wow, it's kind of like an underrated game in a sense. Yeah. I'm like, oh, not that many people are reviewing it. But when you think about like how many people like write Yelp reviews after they go eat, like not that many in the grand like scheme of diners, I guess.
For example, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, any guesses at how many people own that game?
I mean, I don't think that game did that well. Wait, what did you say? Brotherhood or Odyssey?
Brotherhood.
Oh, Brotherhood. Brotherhood. I feel like Brotherhood was kind of the peak of it, right?
Yeah. Well, guess what? Only 760,000 people. I was looking up Papers, Please.
Because Brotherhood was a PS3 game, right?
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm just saying, like, that's probably like an HD release. All right.
Stardew Valley on PS4.
Oh, a lot?
600,000.
Oh, really? It's like way... I guess that's like a PC-centric thing, though. It's like, and also, I feel like it's doing probably really well on Switch. Like, I... Like, no lobby.
Oh, yeah.
Like, fuck it.
Oh, here you go. Well, that's Firewatch. Like, Firewatch. Any guesses?
Not that much.
Not that many.
340,000.
That's okay. Well, recently, like, it came out that the developers behind the new Wonder Boy game, I think it's like... It's not the same people that did the Dragon's full Trap. Remake or whatever. It's like a sequel. It sold like 8 times as much on Switch compared to like PC and PS4 and Xbox. Like, it's like anything that goes on Switch has like a way higher chance apparently of selling like crazy well for like indie developers, which I think is like really interesting. Like, still, oh, shit, like, wait. Even 2 years out or whatever.
All right, Katie, Persona 5.
I'm going to say 500,000-ish.
No, 1.7 million.
Oh, okay. I was guessing low because the other ones are really low.
But right above it in the list, Everybody's Gone to the Rapture.
What?
Doing better on PS4. And then
that
right
game
above
sucks.
That.
I'm sorry. That
Witcher 3 Wild Hunt
so
Goaty
boring,
Edition.
Dude.
Wait.
That's like one of the few games that almost put me to sleep.
Almost did as well as Witcher 3?
EGTTR did 1.7, and The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt Goaty Edition on PS4 has 1.9.
Is that that's probably separated from like playing
probably
like
the regular,
base game?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
it's like still, when you combine those,
yeah, exactly.
It's, like,
it's like
a shitload.
Right.
Yeah. I've still started calling it Gautier.
Like the band?
Or Game of the Year Edition.
Yeah.
That's my
isn't that a band?
Oh shit, dude. Get Absolver 2.3 million.
Wasn't
Mass
that that
Effect
was free
Andromeda,
on PlayStation Plus?
Million. Oh,
I think skew a lot because like PlayStation Plus offers like, I think they're switching to just 2 games like this year at some point, but it's usually 6, and usually there's like a lot of crossplay between Vita and PS4 or PS3 and PS4, so there's like a lot of games that like come out every month. Obviously,
none of these stats are really surprising me, to be honest.
Yeah,
so
I feel like these stats are kind of like, there's like a feeling I'm like, oh, that's less than I thought, but you know,
at the same time,
but yeah. I think what's cool is that it actually tells you what the scale of it means to be AAA.
Yeah,
like for example, most games are what you'd maybe expect. Grand Theft Auto 5 is 55 million people
yep.
in that game.
Jesus.
I mean,
yeah.
that game is like has been in the top 10 for like 5 years now or whatever.
It's like the biggest piece of media of all time, right? Like,
oh yeah, it's literally sold, it's always in the top 10 of like the whatever selling thing every month. It's like always in the top 10 of the year. It's just like that game is unstoppable. Everyone has at least 5 copies, and that's just how it is.
I gotta pick up my 5th copy today, actually, and you reminded me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've only got 4.
Yeah,
so
I have it on PS3, PS4. I've been meaning to get it for, like, my Xbox and my PC.
3DS.
You know? I mean, the moment they ported it to Switch, it's
iPad.
Rockstar can retire.
I'm there. Give me a Chinatown Stories 2, Nintendo, you cowards.
Oh, that game slaps.
Ballad of Gay Tony 2. Which would be, like, an offensive thing
nowadays.
Yeah, Gay
Tony 2.
Yeah, Gay Tony 2.
Gayer Tony.
He's more gay now. No, I think he has in like an expansion thing this year for GTA Online, like Tony was.
Damn, I want to interview like, someone who's still playing GTA Online.
I mean, there's like bunch. There's a lot.
I know, it's crazy.
There's people like roleplay in it. I think it's like Waypoint or some shit had a story on like role players in GTA, and it was Glixel. Was it a Will Parton thing?
The rare Glixel.
It might have been Will. I don't know. Someone like interviewed someone that role plays in GTA Online as like
a
cop
Luke.
Or some shit.
Luke
maybe it's Luke. Yeah. I don't know. Someone did it. And it was really interesting. It was really cool. Of like this dude that's just like, yeah, I just like to role play in GTA Online, and we have like a whole like people interact with me like I'm actually this person, and it's like that seems like so fun. I love when like online spaces like do that. And I've seen like a little bit of that with Red Dead Online, but it's like so shitty right now that it's not.
That was my favorite shit in WoW. It was like people role playing on the servers, and I'm just like, damn, yeah, so this fun. Is corny as fuck, but this is it's fun too. Yeah, it's like we're all playing pretend. I want to do that shit so bad. It's like LARP, but not.
Exactly, it's like digital LARPing.
But you don't have to sacrifice your dignity for it. You
exactly,
know?
LARP.
Because no one, you could just go under a new identity. I don't know. I've always wanted to do that, but
the takeaway, Kyle, I think, is that indie and AAA are not as like separated. They're not on as different planes as like the big corporations would like you to think. You know. I think
that's I'm sure Celeste did really well last year, like that was made by like three people, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like setting up the underdog story is part of indie game marketing these days though, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true. Like, I definitely like feel like
person...
I mortgaged my house for this.
This came out of nowhere. Oh my god, have you heard of such a thing? Okay. Let's talk about
on my deathbed. And I made this idea game for I hope game
brought me back to life.
If this game didn't break a million copies sold, I would have just, I would have perished.
I would have turned to dust.
Okay, let's talk about Super Smash Brothers, because I have some shit I want to talk about with this game. I just got it to play over the holidays. I'm playing it by myself because my roommates are not big gamers. Not as big of gamers as I am. You know what I'm saying?
It's a trend with your roommates, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I got my cousin to play some Puyo Puyo Tetris with me, and I beat him every single time.
Dude, I did that with my brother-in-law over Christmas, for sure. I did the exact same thing. I was like, do you want to play Tetris with me? And he's like, sure. And he's like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I just got like a fucking, what's it called?
T-spins.
What's like the opening clear?
I was doing T-spins, Tetrises.
Perfect clears, opening clears, just getting Tetris on him so hard.
Algorithm
destroyed
him.
T-spin on that bitch.
Yeah.
It was dirty.
What am I gonna do? Not try? I wanted to be like.
I wish Tetris Effect had multiplayer. Let's bring it back to Tetris for a second, because man, I would love to just like pop in Tetris Effect to play with friends, and I can't. And I don't want to re-download Puyo Puyo Tetris or bring out my Switch, which has it. It's like. I have it on PS4 and Switch for some fucking reason. I don't know how that happened. I think it was like I just like a impulse buy one day. I was like, oh, you know, $30, whatever. And then why do I have this twice for some reason?
Yeah.
But Tetris is about to be great with two people.
Smash
is not multiplayer.
There's no multiplayer in it. It's like a conscious design decision they talked about in the route to release, where they're like, oh, it's about like getting in the zone, and there's like a weird like online component of like scoreboards and shit, leaderboards.
Yeah.
But like there's no multiplayer, like no local or online multiplayer, which is like, I wonder if like maybe one day they'll patch it in, like, hey, surprise, we did it because you asked for it. But I feel like, especially because it's like a $40 Tetris game, I'm like, you don't even have multiplayer, dude.
Probably not. Yeah. Probably not going to do that.
Probably not.
Gonna mention, because I did get Luminous Remastered, which came out a while ago, but that game is fucking good, dude. Like, what sucks is that it's like the same game as I played on PSP a couple decades ago, or like a decade and a half ago or whatever, but it holds up really well, and I just wish there was
the
like
HD,
more new shit.
Or are you playing on Switch or are you playing on PC?
Switch.
Yeah. The HD rumble in that game is fucking crazy. It like makes my hands numb. Yeah. Like I cannot play with it on. So I'm like,
it's just like jiggling in my hand.
It's like the trans vibrator times like 20. It's like really intense. It's like, man, yeah. Mizuguchi really went in on this.
It makes me.
He's probably just like dial it up.
Yeah,
dial it up. Turn it all the way
we
up.
We need more.
It's too much. But that game owns like just the songs.
Yeah,
are
shining,
all fucking
dude.
Good, dude. The game itself is like, it's like Puyo.
That's what I remember playing it. Like, my only experience with this game is just playing it at demo stations and GameStop. And I was like, this is supposed to be good, but it just was not clicking.
You gotta have like headphones
have
on
headphones.
And like get into
headphones.
The beat of it. It's like that's
when you're just like boom, 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 just dropping shit. And you're just like, fuck, and you're just looking
I'm
like
in the
five
club.
Steps ahead, and you're like,
I'm in the club.
And then the skin changes and the song changes, and then it's like, your whole vibe, like, it feels like you've morphed. It's like an acid trip.
I have a $1 million idea. I need to start DJing in San Francisco, but I'm just going to play Lumines and just
people do that for sure. Just
play Lumines. That's for sure probably a thing of like music, rhythm games and shit. Well, like, so there's a while ago where I wanted to do that because Project Diva Future Tone, which is like an arcade, a port of the Project Diva arcade game, which is like the Hatsune Miku rhythm game. And it has like 250 something songs in it. It's like a huge fucking game. It's kind of like the ideal Project Diva game. It doesn't have all the fun like raising sim elements of the other Project Diva games, but it's like, just if you just want a lot of songs and a lot of the rhythm, like rhythm game shit and dress up, it's like, that's what it is. And they have like a playlist feature, and I was like, oh, it'd be fun if I could like make a playlist for our party, and I would just sit there and play this whole like just Project Diva playlist for like a Vocaloid party, and that would be sick. But I have not played in a while, so I'm probably really rusty. I used to be really good. I'd be like on the second highest difficulty, and I'd be like feeling strong.
Project Diva is good. I only played a little bit for PS4, but I want to play more.
Yeah, it fucking slaps, dude. And the music's great.
I'm just not that good at it, which is sad because I'm usually good at rhythm games.
I'm so good at rhythm games. It's like that's like my one talent in video games, I think. It's like I can like get into a rhythm really well. Like most video games I'm like average at. Like it's pretty rare that I'm like good at a game. Like I'm not good at Call of Duty, but I play it anyway. But I feel like with rhythm games I'm like actually good.
Have you played the BTS one?
The BTS one?
Yeah.
They have a BTS one?
BTS like Superstar for mobile.
No, what?
Yeah. Oh, I just found out about this.
What?
Yeah. Someone was showing it to me on her phone, and she was like, check this out. And she starts playing like a BTS Cypher Part 2, and it's like RM's verse. And it was like, dude, I am good at rhythm games. And I was like, what the fuck are you? Like, you're crazy. She was just like, I swear her thumbs were moving like she was in a Japanese arcade.
That sounds like Voez or whatever. Like, Voez is like that, where you just like, it's like a mobile one and you just like tap it.
This is even crazier than Vo or whatever that one is. Her fingers were like, shuffling like Naruto shit. Like, I was like, what, dude? Jutsu, like, rhythm game jutsu. I was like, super impressed. But BTS Superstar, dope shit. If you want to learn the BTS catalog, there's also SM Superstar and JYP Superstar. So they have.
Oh, so there's like a bunch for like K-pop.
Yes.
How much does it cost?
It's crazy.
It's free, but you collect like cards, and then they like let you level up your songs so you can do like harder difficulties and stuff like that. It's crazy. It's Whoa. Really sick, actually. And I'm
That's cool. I had no idea it was a thing. Because I've been wanting to check out Sintus 2, I think, which is like a new rhythm game that I saw. It was on like a few Giant Bomb end of the year lists, and it's like a mobile type thing. But it has like really cool art. Sintus, so Cyntus 2. But yeah, I haven't played it yet, but I think it's cost to play, and then you buy characters or some shit. I don't really know how it works, but I really like the art style for it, so I want to check it out. And it's supposed to have, like, a lot of different genres, and it's just, like, I think, like, a typical mobile rhythm game otherwise, but I want to check that out. Especially because I gave up Love Nikki.
Cytus.
That's my big thing this year. C-Y-T-U-S. Is I used to play Love Nikki, Dress Up Queen. Every day, and then in 2019 I said, no more. I play this game every fucking day for, like, hours every day. Literally, like, before I go to bed every night, I would play it for, like, a few hours. Like, on my phone. I would just go through and just do all my shit for the day. And, like, that's just, like, so much fucking time, you know? And I just kind of realized, like, I didn't, like, delete it off my phone or anything. I just kind of put it in my games folder. And it's, like, I might go back to it if I see, like, an event or some shit. But, like, which I'm scared to do because I feel like that would just fall.
You're going
to
go back in. Back
yeah, but I don't want to lose all my progress, you know?
Holy shit.
Yeah, like, I literally played, God, so it's like, if I'm averaging, like, 2 hours a day just by a loose metric, that's every day.
Hours?
So it's like,
is that 2 hours of, like, staring at your screen on your phone a day
for
playing this game?
Yeah, pretty much.
That is insane.
I used to play League for, like, 4 hours a day.
Dude, like right? It's like, years. You know, it's like, it's definitely like you kind of like go mindless. Like I would be like listening to a podcast or like music or something and I'd just be like, it's my decompress. Like, all right, I gotta go do these quests and I gotta go craft the shit. And like,
I can't play a mobile game for like 2 hours nonstop. I can do like 15 minutes.
Yeah, and there's like,
that's like,
it's not like an active game. I think that helps. It's like you're making outfits. So you're just like scrolling through menus and stuff. Like, okay, I want to wear this dress or I want to wear this coat or these shoes. Or like, you know, this makeup and you're like trying different things and seeing how it works and like,
yeah,
thinking about the score and doing math in your head, like, okay, well, this one's like a 5-star item. It's like, this one's like, you know, like 3-star, but it's cuter. And you're kind of like balancing it out. Like, is it worth it?
Can you sell your account?
Anyway, what?
Can you sell your account?
Can I sell my account? I wonder, actually. I have a lot of stuff on there. I do have a lot of stuff on there.
I mean,
but I also don't like the idea of just selling it off, you know? I've definitely poured like $10 at least in that game. So it's like, I've definitely made a monetary investment. But yeah, I'm kind of giving it up this year. It's a weird thing. Yeah.
Good for you.
I don't know. I do feel, now I'm talking about it, I'm like, I kind of miss it.
You're fine. Aww. You're fine. Stay strong.
I'm fine. Yeah. I'm good.
Next Kyle's up, definitely the least gamery of everyone on this podcast by a long shot.
Yeah,
like, and he makes games, so
he's like latching on to games gamer status by a thread right now.
I really am. I'm definitely the weakest link of the gamers among us. I am. One of my resolutions of 2019 is to more actively play stuff, and part of that is like,
it's the opposite of only mine.
I have an issue where like I always try to be productive like all the time. So it's hard for me sometimes to like come home from work and not want to like work on other shit. And like playing games or like even reading a book feels like a luxury that I'm like, I got to work on something. So I'm trying to like make time when I like come home during the week and like in the weekends to actually like play shit more like intentionally versus like when it feels good to kind of get in the rhythm of it. This is actually something I saw Bennett Foddy talk last year, actually in like January, kind of about like his practice as a game developer. And he was like, part of what I do is not just like make games, but like I intentionally spend time to play what's new and understand what's going on and like be up to date and not be somebody that just like all the references are 5 years old. So I've been trying to, this year at least, just kind of sit down and be like, oh, I'm going to play, you know, 2 hours of a game today. So hopefully my gamer status will be reminted in 2019. But for now,
he's got work to do.
I got work to do. If you want to get this gamer badge,
you got some work to do.
Gotta get this.
Speaking of which, Smash Brothers. We were supposed to talk about Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers. We were talking about Smash Brothers.
What I want to say about this game is, it's like, I don't really have people to play it with here, which realistically with any fighting game, if you're not surrounded by like other gamers, which a lot of gamers aren't, a lot of gamers have to play in their own homes. It's just like so hard to get into one of these fucking games because unless you're really good and you want to play online and like learn all the stupid bullshit that it takes to be good at one of these games on the internet, and your internet's fast enough to do that to begin with, then it's like you're just unlocking the characters and like playing a fighting game where the premise is not that like dynamic to begin with, especially when you're playing against a computer. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
the point of this game is to be social and to play with other people, but as an adult,
and like bitch about rule settings together on a couch.
Yes. Like, I don't, it's the most like adult unfriendly video game genre, I think. Does anybody have this experience? Every time, like, Fighters, I had that problem. Basically, Street Fighter V, I had that problem. Every fighting game I've tried to play where I'm like, yeah, this is a cool game, and I'll play, like, a few matches and learn some new techniques or whatever and watch, like, 3 YouTube videos about, like, basic tech stuff, and I'm like, oh, wait, actually, I'm never gonna do this shit.
Yeah. This is like the crazy thing about just playing online in general and especially in fighting games. Like, I don't know what happened, but just everybody online is fucking good and it's really annoying.
Yeah.
Like, I was to come back to Smash Brothers in like 1.5 minutes, but I've been playing Mario Tennis Aces and I was like, okay, I kind of get the basics. Let me go online. And I was sitting with Rebecca and I was like, you want to watch me get smashed? And like, without a fail, first match I played, just totally perfect game on the other person's side. And I got 0 points. And I was like, what? It's fucking Mario Tennis. Why is everybody that plays online just fucking great? And Smash, and especially fighting games, are like 100% that. Like StarCraft was like this. It's like no matter who you play, like just the bar for being good at a game is just everybody that plays online is just good. And it's really hard to engage with that unless you're like trying to fucking engage with that.
I mean, on the subject of Nintendo games, I know their matchmaking shit is totally bonkers. Like, it's not really... They're not like a normal... Like normal other games. Most games do, like, matchmaking based on skill. You know, like, there's, like, a secret thing behind the scenes that, like... Or it's, like, level-based. I don't know. Like, Splatoon, I think, is just purely level-based. But, like, for the most part, it's, like, kind of a free-for-all. Which I don't think is very fair, because, like... You'll get matched up with someone who's like the like squid guy in Mario Tennis, and they just like ink across, and it's like they're like really good, and you're like, well, I'm fucked as Daisy here, and you know, and like I definitely had that problem. I didn't play that much Smash, but I had that problem with ARMS, where it was just like it's unplayable online. Like it's just not gonna happen.
Who was out there like being like, I'm gonna get good at ARMS and just go online and just smash people. Like, it is crazy that
I don't know. I mean,
there's enough of
those
people that everybody's experience is like, oh, man, hard to play ARMS online because a lot of good people playing. Unless it's just, like, two guys playing and they're both really good.
I wonder if they have, like, I feel like that's a 1v1 game versus, like, team versus team game that where that's, like, an issue. I feel like it's easier to play Splatoon or something like that. Or
yeah,
League
like
of
a shooter,
Legends
yeah,
or a MOBA or
yeah.
a shooter.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, inherently more social and you don't feel like... You feel like you can get carried by other people. It's a little bit more even. But in 1v1, it's like you're either better or you're worse. And when you're starting, you're likely going to be worse. So it's like, what's even the point when the threshold between like worse than the other player and better than the other player takes like a shit ton of hours of investment that are not good, that are not justified in the game itself. Like Street Fighter, there's like nothing to do if you're not already good. You know, like the game
yeah,
already
so
assumes
true.
That you're good at the game. And like the process of getting good, they do not really help you with that like at all. Even in training, it's like, what do I do here? Even when they like...
That was like, dude, in Street Fighter 4, it was like so fucked like that where if you wanted to go look at the move list, it was literally like a PNG. It was just a picture.
That's
of,
I feel
like
that's such a fighting game thing, though, right?
It's like fuck you, so guys. Much. Like, come on. Like, try to open up a little bit to somebody that's not already good at the game.
And we give...
I mean, that's... Oh, I
go
was
ahead,
gonna say, like, that's what I always liked about Skullgirls, which is, like, a really hard and, like, hard to penetrate or, like, conceive... Like, if you look at it from the outside, it's, like, a pretty hard and, like, very, like... intricate fighting game, but the tutorials in that game are really good, and like I actually felt like I was learning how to play fighting games like through playing Skullgirls as like tutorials and story mode like beats and stuff, whereas I feel like a lot of fighting games don't hold your hand in the beginning there, so there's like this kind of expect you, they're like, well, if you need to learn, here's like a list of rules and then we'll teach you how to jump and punch and do a light and heavy attack or whatever, but there's not like much hand holding for like what you need to actually be successful at a fighting game. Whereas I feel like Skullgirls is like the only fighting game I've played and like that had like the tools that felt like made me feel like I knew how to play it.
It's almost like a pride thing. Like they don't want to admit that these games have like all of these systems that are just really fucking complex because they just don't want to like breathe that out there and be like, yeah, it's going to take you a lot to learn this shit. But why can't like, we talk about like user experience in video games. We talk about like whether the tutorials are good, whether it's like helping you out enough to like be able to play the game correctly. But I feel like this is not a criticism that people ever bring up with regards to fighting games, even though I feel like it's the most annoying thing about any given fighting game where I'm like, fucking teach me how to play. Like, this is so stupid, dude. It doesn't make any sense to me, you know, like, and there's no real systems for that. And I think, you know, to some extent, that's a reason why the community is so vibrant, because people help each other and they come up with new techniques and shit like that, whatever. But like, why can't you make like a robust tutorial system that maybe factors in with some sort of like campaign or some shit. I don't fucking know. Like, why is that asking so much with regards to a fighting game? I don't really understand it. And maybe I'm like, maybe this is like sacrilege to even be saying this, because doing so would, you know, break down the need for like mentors and like people like that, you know what I'm saying? But it might be nice if people could learn how to play these games independently, because not everybody wants to go into an arcade and like talk to the dude who's really good at the game and be like, hey, can you teach me how to do a like whatever the hell cancel technique is. I don't know. Like, I just feel like we hold fighting games to different standards, and it doesn't really make sense. Like, even Nintendo, the company that's supposed to make like the most accessible games and shit, is like, Smash is super obtuse if you think about it.
Like, oh, Smash is so obtuse. Like, I still don't, I feel like, so I'm the type of person that gets excited for every Smash game, buys every Smash game like on launch, and then plays it for like a few weeks, and I'm like, I'm never gonna touch it again. Because like when people come over, they don't want to play Smash, they want to play like Jackbox Party games or something, you know? It's like, yeah. Smash has never like been the, or Mario Kart, it's like Smash has never been the go-to party game for my friends and I. And I feel like this is the first, like Ultimate is the first one that I'm finally getting a grasp of, I feel like, even though I've already fallen off it, but like the specifically the Inkling character, who's like super complicated, which is like strange, but like her abilities, like I feel like because I play so much Splatoon, I'm just like matching the abilities with like weapons in Splatoon. So I'm like, oh, like this is the roller. Like this is what you do to make the roller come out. And this is like the bomb. So it's like, I'm kind of like matching it up to like things I already know. And that's helping me like remember those moves in like the, if they're light or heavy or whatever the fuck, for like other characters, which I think is like an interesting thing. Cause it's like the first time that the games kind of started making sense for me, but also there's some characters where I'm like, who would play as this character ever? Like, who cares? Like, King K. Rool, like, controls like shit. And I'm like, who would choose this? I don't get it.
He's apparently really good. I don't know.
He's apparently one of the best competitive ones. I don't get it.
That exact statement is like the annoying part of fighting games, where it's like, you can play with a good character and you're like, this feels like ass and I have no idea what I'm doing. They're apparently good though, and you're like, like why can't
look the,
why can't
the priority on his like, forward tilt is among the best in the like, game. Like,
it's so dumb.
His DI when you get smashed, it's really top tier, S tier. No, it's just like
Isabelle's also really cool.
It just,
that's another character I really liked. Like, she has like a fishing hook that pulls characters towards her, which I really like. I'm like,
oh yeah,
it feels like a Mortal Kombat. Like, get over here. It's really cool.
There's just like more characters where I'm like, what the fuck does this do? What does this person do? Like, how do
there's
I use this
so
one's
much going on.
Moves?
Also, like, yeah. Full on bullshit, like tutorial bullshit. Like, you look at move sets for characters and it doesn't list all the moves. Like, I opened up Villager's move set and I was like, what's this weird thing I keep doing? And it's like, oh, it doesn't tell you that if you're running and pressing B versus sprinting and pressing B, yeah. There's two
it's
separate
like two
fucking
yeah.
things.
It's really
like, what?
Weird.
You're just supposed to just figure that out? Like, this is the whole point is like showing me the moves of the moveset and you're going to just withhold stuff for me for like, I don't fucking know why, because it's cool. Like, yeah. Fighting games, man.
Yeah. Anyway, Smash is fun. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, I feel like I've been playing it with my partner. Like, we were doing laundry a few weeks ago, and we were just, like, playing local head-to-head or whatever. And it's like, you know, that's kind of fun. But
must
also
be nice.
Yeah.
Must be real
sorry,
nice.
Sorry, Josh. I mean, that's, like, but he's, like, he got really into it. Like, he unlocked all the fighters and everything. Like, he was, like, that was the first game I saw him, like, really embrace in a long time. But I did not unlock all the fighters. I don't think I ever will. But now he doesn't play it anymore. So
I have a secret.
But he got his fill.
There's a strat if you want to unlock all the characters faster.
Oh no, yeah, he did all the
strats. I've heard about this.
He did all the strats. Yeah. Like, you go to the spirit mode and then you log out, and
you
then
turn
you,
your switch off.
You
or
turn
some
switch
shit?
Off, and then no,
yeah.
You don't turn. You close the application.
You just close the app,
so you close
yeah.
the game, and then you reopen it, and then you do that, and then after 50 times it stops working. So then you just have to like go into a smash, lose immediately. There's like there's a lot.
Yeah,
of
there's
it's so stupid.
I should have known. You would have known.
I know, Josh.
Pedantic.
I know.
But it's like, that's what they have to do to keep you playing the fucking game. Literally.
I mean, I don't. Also, I feel like the characters just feel like heavier to me than like.
Every time I play, I'm like,
why is it not as fast as Melee? Every time I play a Smash
game, like,
since GameCube.
Yeah, it's like they go slower every time. They all feel like King K. Rool.
Everybody feels like bigger and slower.
Yeah.
And
it's like, you know, everyone just feels like slow. I just don't get it. Everyone's a sloth. Everyone's part sloth.
Yeah.
Mode.
You want to, let's talk about reading and then we can, wrap up. Yeah. Cause Katie, you've been reading, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Wait, what is reading?
So yeah, in light of me quitting Love Nikki, Just Like Queen, I was like, I'm going to read more this year. I only read like 7 books last year, which is like not that much. Like that's really nothing. So I'm like trying to read more this year. I have a Kindle, so it's like, you know, like I'm trying to like not have a lot of like shit, like in general, like I'm just getting rid of stuff. So I'm kind of like in this like just buying digital books, which I know some people are like weird about. I don't know. For me, it's nice to have everything in like one place. I don't like bookshelves are nice. If I had like a big house or a big apartment, I would for sure have like a bookshelf and buy actual books, but I don't. So I'm just sticking with my Kindle. And I just started reading Pachinko, which is, like, this, like, super, super long book. And I don't know. It's just, like, really nice, you know? It's, like, I feel like I'm really hooked on it, which I don't remember the last time a book has, like, really... I don't remember the last time I, like, read a book so excitedly, you know? Like,
is it a fiction book?
Yeah, it's fiction. It's based it's about, I don't know, it's really hard to describe because it's like such a dent. There's like so much going on, but it's like about this family in Korea in like the 19, I think it starts in the 1920s, but it follows them like through the decades, like through like World War II, and also so it's like covering like the Japanese occupation of Korea and like all this stuff, and like also it like bounces between Japan and Korea, and it's just like really good. And it's just following this like one family's basically just like saga, and it's like really twisty, but like it doesn't feel like melodramatic. It's just like all very well written, but not in like a super overtly like poetic way. It's just like an easy read, but it's also very interesting and also really educational. Like there's like a lot of stuff I didn't know, but it's not like, doesn't feel like a history lesson. It's just like existing in this time, and it's just like this really amazing and like moving book. Like there have been like a couple times I'm like getting choked up. I'm like, oh man, I don't remember last time like a book affected me this much. Like it's like really good. And I just feel like, you know, I don't know how many games I played last year. I played probably like a billion. That's just like a guesstimate. I am gonna do like a spreadsheet this year because I want to see how many games I actually play. But yeah, I'm trying to like play less games because like when I was doing my end of the year stuff in 2018, I was like, there's so many games I played and I don't remember anything from them. Like I literally, it's just like a gap in my memory. Like I might remember like one little thing or like one strange thing. Like I would look it up and I'd be like, wow, I wrote a review of this game and I only remember like most of it. Like I remember like one part of this game. So it's like, so I've decided like I'm still going to be playing games. Obviously, like I'll still probably be playing Black Ops every now and then in other multiplayer games, but like I'm trying to cut down on like trying to play everything unless I'm like required to for work, because it's like, what's the point if I don't even remember it by the end of the year if it didn't make an impact on me in any way? Like
I agree, Katie.
What's the point, you know?
I totally
like,
agree.
I'd rather read a book or like,
sounds like you're in like gamer warning status. Your little title might get revoked.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I guess we'll see with my
There's no
I mean,
fucking
I guess
way, Kate. You already play so many video games.
I'm already playing a game this year, so it's not going that well. Well, I started playing The Eternal Castle, which is, like, really cool.
Oh, I want
to
check
yeah. We all got to play that and talk about it
next well,
app
we'll
or something.
Wait. Yeah,
I'm going to get
it's pretty cool.
It,
I'm not
sure.
done with it, and I want to finish it before I talk about
sick.
It, but it's, I feel like
question.
Another world. Have I got the game for you?
Can a book make you cry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I just said it. Like, totally. I got, like, emotional. There's, like, this, like, goodbye scene, and, like, I want to say the end of, like, the first third that I was, like, oh, it was like really heavy, and it was like, it's like the Pachinko does such a good job of like setting up these characters, because like it starts out with, like, there's like this man and he's like disabled and he can't marry because of like his disabilities, because of the law or something. I can't remember the specifics, but then he gets in like an arranged marriage with this woman, and then they like fall in love and they have like one kid after like a series of miscarriages, and it's like this really moving, like, basically their life story, and it's all in like the first chapter of just like this one couple, and then it just like moves on to like, okay, now here's like the story of this woman's life and her daughter who are like living alone and at this boarding house.
I wanna read
and
that.
It's like, it's really good. It's so good.
Sounds cool.
I think,
but it's, yeah,
I was like joking with that question, yeah, by the way.
I was, but I'm
sorry that,
like, for serious,
y'all took it seriously. Sometimes I've been realizing that I don't sometimes sound sarcastic enough, or like I'm joking, okay, enough.
It's fair.
We should have.
I have a theory that I think specifically Katie, you're not very good at recognizing sarcasm.
No,
I've listened to some eps, yeah, and I'm like, damn, that was a total joke, and you just
no,
took
that's
it.
Totally. I'm like oblivious, like, for sure. I just take everything at face value. That's just
me
my
and Katie
mantra.
Combined.
Maybe it's the journalist in
we
me.
Have
you know,
the,
like,
yeah,
I just,
we have that.
I accept,
like,
the truth.
The double whammy going on. I was gonna say we should have like an emotional books awards.
Ooh, we could do a little side cast about, we could do a little book club.
Book club, oh, that'd be fun.
Bad end book club? I don't want to have to read books though.
Oh,
they're so long.
Josh, like, my favorite book,
they're so long to read. You know, Kyle, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh yeah, howlongtoread.com.
HLTR. We should start that.
We had a conversation before this podcast about, like, it's like time is an interesting thing in general, and we were talking about just like links, like games. I think, I don't know if this is the official bad end opinion, but games are like just too fucking long, except for like the youngest among us that have a ton of disposable time to play games.
Mm-hmm. So me.
And it's cool that those people can like play a lot of game, but also if that's going to exist, like let that game be something like Fortnite, not necessarily in form, but a game that is designed in a way where you can play it a lot, but it does not necessitate you playing it for 80 hours a week. But games like to just be fucking long. And we were looking at times to read famous novels versus like how long it takes to beat the average 60-hour video game. And let me tell you guys, there are a lot of good things you can read that do not take 60 hours to do. And it's like, man, do I really want to do this corpse run in Dark Souls? Or could I like start reading the first half of War and Peace?
Yeah.
I mean, oh, Dark Souls,
it's like a real
sounds
trade-off.
A little more fun than reading War and Peace. No offense.
You might be surprised having not read War and Peace.
Yeah.
But
I think I'm good.
The other thing is, like, I feel like there's this thing with video games that's just the nature of how they're built, right? Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I call it the might as well syndrome. I know we have probably some developers who listen to this show who are going to be like, yeah, we have a phrase for this already. And you're an asshole. Or you think you're coming up with this original idea, but it's like games are, you know, based on systems, and people create these systems that can then house a lot more within them, right? Like, so if you create like a game world that functions properly, I feel like there's an incentive to, like, well, we made this fucking system, might as well get the most value out of it, might as well make it last 60 hours, right? Like, if I have Kakariko Village or something like that, like, fill it with stuff to do. Like, you don't want just like an area, because then you're just leaving all this potential stuff on the table. And I think video games as a medium, because creating these systems is like such an intensive process, it makes it so that the pursuit of creating like a whole game is altogether more about like filling this system with content. And it's a very content driven medium. Whereas books, it doesn't take much to put some stuff on a paper. It doesn't take much to like shape this story. It can be long, it can be short. and it doesn't feel like you're wasting an idea or you're wasting a system or like the your work on a shorter book. You know what I'm saying? Like if your book is 100 pages, it's not like that much. It doesn't, you're not wasting like your effort because the story was smaller. You know, it just took you less time to write. Whereas
I guess it's also, it's weird though, because like by that logic, it seems like books should be longer. Like by the might as well syndrome, it's like, why not write 10 more chapters? There's no barrier.
No, but with books, it's like, if you had to invent the English language every time you wrote a book, then every book would probably be really fucking long. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think why games are like this. Because
I mean, I think it's just the problem that, like, there's, I mean, obviously there's editors, but it's like, there's a lot of times where I'm like, I feel like this needed an editor. Like, I don't think this is like very, I don't think it's adding to the experience, enriching, I guess, the core experience or whatever of this game. Which I think like when Tim Rogers was on, he like talked about the idea of like all games should be like really short, but then the side content could be like very long, like who cares? But it's like, it's more if you want it. But if you want to just do like the streamlined experience, it's there. And I really like that idea, but I don't think any developer would ever do that.
I think partially comes in if you look at a lot of like the indie games that came out that like made a big splash, a lot of them used engines. Like a lot of, think of how many amazing like art indie short vignette games were made with the Source engine. Like Robert Yang's stuff was like, they're not building these systems from the ground up for a lot of these. Like, Source was huge for the indie game community because, like, you could, and those games on average were shorter because, like, you didn't have to build this stuff from the ground up. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like as indie developers have gotten access to more resources where they can, like, kind of build their own worlds from the bottom up in a more, like, robust, like, less pre, maybe I'm totally speaking out of my ass here, but I feel like if you take, like, The Witness or something, or like Jonathan Blow, like as he's like building his own worlds, his games have gotten longer. You know what I'm saying? Like the more stuff you start doing with systems that don't already exist, the more that you're creating from scratch, the more incentivized you are to like make the most of this world and just create a lot of content for it, or else you're not giving the most to the system that you built. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, it's actually, it's a really interesting point. And I think that like, I think it does kind of speak to like the work of development in general, where like a game is kind of like a little bit like an iceberg, and all that you really see of a game is the top little part that like hangs out above the water, because so much work has to go in to just make that little part possible. And I think that part of, especially like game development, that can't rely on the bottom part of the iceberg already being there. Like you do so much work just to like get Arthur Morgan to be able to stand in a field and like run for 10 miles that not then using that system that you built to then do a lot of stuff with feels like all that time is a sunk cost.
Right.
Like Rockstar is not going to make the Red Dead engine and to make a game that is 30 minutes long. Like they would do something that's very different than that. I think it's kind of the point that you're getting at, that like there's basically like, it's kind of like a seesaw of like a sunk cost versus like recouping value on what you're doing, where it's like, if you spend $10 million and, or maybe not even 10 million, it's like if you spend $250 million over the course of 3 years to just get your fucking renderer right, like you better render some shit for the next, you know, hour, and I mean for like next year, and get some like really good looking vistas up in Red Dead, because so much work went into just getting that thing possible. So I think, yeah, I think I totally agree. I think it's an interesting point to think about, like access to tools actually breeds longer games than like having less access. And yeah, I don't know. So I think there's definitely something there.
And I think you had said something about like the modding community, how like, you know, you create this system, you create like a certain amount of content and let the community build the rest. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think that's like a viable way of doing this, because like just that philosophy itself of like, well, we made the system, we have to make the most of it, is so like antithetical to, in my opinion, in a lot of ways, it's like antithetical to making like tight, like directed, focused art. And I think that shows all the time in games where you're doing shit that's pointless, that makes no sense. And when you play a game that is like simple, like fucking Jason Rohrer and his like, you know, passage or something like that, you know, that is simple and like, and you can like get through quickly and it's very focused experience. It feels like night and day, like a totally different thing.
Yeah. That's like, I mean, that's like kind of the shit that I really love about Oberdin, to bring it back to the start of the podcast, is that it's like the game is as long as it needs to be. And it's not like, you get the sense that the, how much time he spent on the core system and how much time he spent on the content are like in balance. And it's not one of these things where there was like this overscoped crazy like engine. I mean, I know he's using Unity, which kind of proves your point in a little bit. It's like he didn't actually have to build his thing. Mm-hmm. Like I think Papers, Please is, I think, about the same length as Oberdin, and that game is like, he definitely,
I
mean, built.
It kind of like depends on your play style or your like skill too. You know, it's not like a
straight,
it's not like a 30 Flights of Loving type thing where it's like 15 minutes and you're done type thing.
Something to think about. I think that this is stuff that is integral to the conversation about like creating games. And like making better games, but also making like more sustainable games. Because I think that image of like, we need to make the most of this system is not ideal. I think that there's an inherent problem with that that does show itself like in a lot of video games. And I don't think it really is working as well anymore. Because, you know, multiplayer games are successful because like, the players are creating those experiences themselves because they're playing against other humans, even if the world is a single Fortnite map or League of Legends Summoner's Rift. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
the system is in place. The players are the ones who are making something out of it by creating different experiences. And I think that single player games still latch onto that old philosophy of like, well, we made this system, we have to do a bunch of shit for it, which is how you get God of War that is just packed with a bunch of bullshit that you don't need. And that they need to like try to sell extra content and stuff like that. But I guess I think we have to like adjust this stuff to move games into the future. That's my like takeaway. That's my perspective on it.
I mean, it's also like a cost thing, right? It's like if a AAA developer, which has like hundreds of employees, is like spending all of this money and all this human power on developing like this, like, what if they build like a whole new engine for this game, which is like very unlikely. But like, you know, it's like, what if they're like building all these new systems from scratch, if it's not like an iterative sequel where they're like kind of building off the framework of like past games? It's like, that's a huge like money sink, and it's like they want to make it worthwhile, so it's kind of like, well, let's just, you know, throw stuff at it and see what sticks. And usually just everything sticks, like, because, you know, it's more content.
It
like,
has to stick.
Yeah, it has to stick. I almost wish like they would take like more single player like side quest driven like open world type games. Like, I wish they kind of like look to like almost MMOs for like inspiration, because I feel like MMOs do like a good balance of like giving players a lot to do but like making most of it feel worthwhile, you know. It's like,
yeah,
there's definitely MMOs that have problems, but like I feel like MMOs are also structured to keep you playing it, and I feel like a lot of open world games don't have like a solid structure. It's like it ends up just feeling kind of like inane in a way.
This was like one of the, relates to something that I read once, I think on Gama Sutra, like about, I mean, it's talking about the Indiepocalypse or some bullshit. And it's like, it was specifically looking at ways that like indies can make money. And one thing this guy pointed out that like, I'm almost reticent to share because it's like, it's a really good idea. And he's like, basically, why don't more indies make sequels to their games? Because there's like, there's this idea in indies that you have to like, every game's got to be this iconoclastic different thing. But he's like, if you're trying to make money, like, you already have so much work that was done into making the first game. And the whole nature of a sequel is that it's like the first thing, but slightly different. And if you could just leverage, you know, the 3, 4, 5 years, 10 years you spent making this single game, like, why not, like, in a year and a half from your initial release or 2 years, like, do a sequel and like, do some more stuff. Like, like I think specifically like even Studio MDHR that did Cuphead, like that game seems ripe for sequel territory. They've like got their art asset pipeline down, like they've got the gameplay,
the marketing
kind of shitty, but like all this stuff, like the game just like sells itself.
I see, and, like, it's like merchandise a Hot Topic.
Yeah.
Which is it's crazy. Fucking weird.
But like it's like shit like that, and like I think about games like Celeste. Like Celeste could get a sequel and it would make a ton of sense. And I think that like, or like even Towerfall, like Towerfall kind of got a sequel and it's by the same company. But like this whole idea of like you do all this work, you make this whole world for yourself, do this one game. Like if you're worried about making money, if money's not an option, that's or not an object, that's a different thing. But like if you're worried about making money, don't like start from scratch the next time. It's like just take that thing, make a sequel, and like see how it does. Like it's gonna sell some copies. Yeah.
I mean, it won't work. That idea probably wouldn't work for, like, obviously most developers that have, like, one-offs or whatever. But
maybe, I don't know. It's, like, it's a thing that I think that would, like, leverage some of this effort. And I think would also, there's equal kind of, like whereas AAA has different sort of work expectations that are bad, I think indies definitely have this sort of work expectation that's bad that, like I don't think people would be stoked if Lucas Pope made Papers, Please 2 versus, like, Oberdin or something.
Papers,
like
Papers Please too.
More Papers Please.
Sounds like a horrible idea.
Yeah, I think you're trying to make
and now I can't worse. Get it out of my head.
Kyle.
Yeah, so Kyle, but it's like I think there's like
stop
a,
making games.
There's an expectation there that like each indie has to make like imagine Jonathan Blow makes Braid 2. Like that's
Braid 2.
That's weird, right? It's a weird thought.
He's still trying to get the girl.
But we have like fucking 5 Grand Theft Autos. Like I think it's a thing where if people start doing it and start showing why it matters, like that becomes an actual viable route. You're building up a brand over time, people understand the stuff, like it's not a massive gamble, etc. I mean, I honestly, like looking at I was looking at Steam Spy, and Papers, Please has sold between 2 and 5 million copies according to them. And
that's crazy.
Oberdin,
that's just on Steam too.
That's just on Steam. And yeah. Oberdin has sold, I think I want to say it was like 200,000 to 300,000 or something. Like
that's nuts.
A few magnitudes lower, and it's like, if he did Papers, Please 2, maybe it would have sold between the two. Like, there's already the brand there. People know what it is. They might buy it. Obviously, I don't think he necessarily cares about money.
I just can't get over that idea. It's so stupid.
But you know what I mean? It's like there's a an argument there to be like, hey, just make the sequel to the game if you're like hurting for cash. So.
Journey 2.
And I feel like that's also like, I mean, we see movies do that, right? It's like,
yeah, it's not crazy. Indies just don't, don't do it. There's no, I don't know why indies don't do it more.
I mean, also it's like, I think there's like a bad rep for sequels, you know, it's kind of like creatively bankrupt or seen that way at least, especially in like movies, you know, especially with reboots. It's like people are like, another reboot, what the hell? Whereas I feel like people are hesitant, especially indie developers are like hesitant to just like keep doing the same thing in a way, you know.
It's like it's crazy because this is the whole premise of like game franchises. Like God of War this year matters not because it's a great game, but because it's like the fucking 10th game in the series of God of War games, and like that's
and
how it gets
to
make
be a
fucking
big change.
I mean, I think the Davey Reedan model is kind of cool, where it's like, or the Brandon Chung thing, where it's like you use a similar aesthetic,
shared universe.
For multiple games, the Beginner's Guide is not a sequel to the Stanley Parable, but it if the words in the game were different, it very well could be. You know what I'm saying? And he's like,
yeah,
doing something similar but playing with the form. And Brandon Chung did that with like Gravity Bone and 30 Flights of Loving. Cosmo D does this with his stuff, where you get like the Norwood Suite, which is like similar to Off Peak, right? That's what it's called.
Off Peak.
I think like that's a cool like way of doing things that we don't see too often either.
I mean, like also like what we were saying earlier, like Robert Yang, he does that, like, right? Like with like
all of his games, very similar.
And he like packages them in like the Radiator packs, right?
Radiator baby.
Yeah.
Anyway, folks.
Yeah, I think and it's cost effective too. It's like, I feel like it establishes like an identity. Like, if you see those square heads, you know, it's like a Blendo Games joint. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, it's just kind of like naturally, like, that's how it is. But his new game isn't like that, so I'm interested, like, how that's gonna. It still has kind of like that low poly vibe, but like, it's like a first person shooter or like heist. I don't know the whole thing, the pitch.
It's called Murder something. Murder Boys.
That's not the name of the game. Sorry, Callum, by the way.
It's something. God, what is it? I don't know. Murder Whatever. Squad. You can get glass in your foot. That's all I remember from the trailer. I mean, like, I'm in. That sounds
And you
sick.
Cannot sneeze.
Yeah, you can't sneeze.
Cowboy.
It's like, I love it. I love, like, dumb ideas like that. It's so silly and fun. But yeah. Brendan Chung's one of the my favorite game developers out there, personally. Like, everything he's made, I'm, like, all in on.
Yeah. So. I haven't played Quadrilateral Cowboy yet.
What?
Bitch! What?
What?
I just clipped my mic.
Dude, that's what you need. You're playing all Sunset Overdrive. You need to switch over Quadrilateral Cowboy.
Dude, listen, everybody on this podcast,
and there's
everybody
mods
on this
in
podcast,
it like,
you better fucking play Quadrilateral Cowboy.
Dude, that was like the best game of the year
back.
That came out. Like, what year was that? 2015? 2016? 2015.
I don't know. That game was also hella delayed. That was
Oh, yeah.
That
was one
like,
that was like in development forever. And then he was just like, it's coming out. And everyone was like, which makes his new game exciting because he's just started development of it. He's like doing live streams.
I'm gonna go back and fucking play Quadrilateral Cowboy.
Yeah, now I want to
choose.
Shit, that game rules. Like I started playing Exapunks, which is a little too dense for me, like, even though it's like a really cool vibe. It's like all another hacking type game. But I like Quadrilateral Cowboy's like deck and like coding style way more. It's like feels more real, I guess.
Yeah,
it's really cool. That game rules. Really good game.
So we did it. 2019 has begun.
We did it.
Bad End We're Podcast.
Here. We're coming up on our 2-year anniversary this year. Isn't that crazy?
That's insane. Two years of Bad End.
2 years of Bad End
Let's go.
Podcast.
Maybe
Not
one day
quite.
We'll
we
get
still
the
have
good
few months,
end.
But you know.
Still working on the
Tell
good
us what
end,
to do. Know. Tell us what to do, folks. Tell us what you want from us. Tell us how we could get better. And you know what? Like, tell your friends too. Help us out here.
yeah.
Do that stuff. Be like, hey, Bad End Podcast. These kids know what they're doing. You know what would also be helpful? If you have ideas for like guests who you're like, you know how people say like, you know, that podcast Chapo Trap House, how people say like, go on Chapo, go on Bad End.
Go on Chapo.
Make that a thing.
Go on Bad End.
Go on Bad End 2019.
You'd be surprised who we know. We know a lot of people.
We have connections.
We can pull some favors.
Yeah. Tim Rogers, go on Bad End.
We got Tim Rogers from Kotaku.com.
Yeah. Hit us up with some of those recs. And we will come back to you. Bad End Turbo 2019. We're kicking it up a notch. It's going to be lit. It's going to be awesome. Stick around. We are, again, Bad End Podcast. You can email us at badendpod@gmail.com. We are on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. Rate us and review us on iTunes. Tell all your friends. Keep an eye out for stuff in the future from us. That is different from what we usually do because we're going to try switching things up, making things a little bit more interesting this year. So keep an eye out. And we will see you in a couple of weeks. Later. Thank you.